All right, here we go. Quickest hour in hockey history coming up. Nick Kypreos, Justin Bourne, minus Simon McKee, who's on location.
We're not sure where he is.
But he'll be back.
Yeah, we're told.
We're giving him a break. Daniela Franceschi, Disco Dan, is producing the show today. We're thankful for that. You know how we know he's producing?
How's that? He got the Bible. We could do a 10-hour show.
We got the best lineup ever. We're not even going to say anything for an hour. We're just going to hold it up and you guys can read it, and it'll be very entertaining.
15 clips. Yeah, we got lots of content.
We got a ton. But in the meantime, we're happy to say that we're glad you're aboard wherever you're watching and listening. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 916 Calgary, Sportsnet Plus. And remember, if you can't catch us live, just download us, especially with this fast one-hour edition of The Real Kipper and Bourne. And, of course, this hour, Real Kipper and Bourne, brought to you by Bet365. Here we go.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good. I feel underdressed compared to you. I love that jacket.
Oh, yeah.
A coral, salmon-y.
I've got our producer, Ryan Fabro, called me like Sam from Goodfellas. It was a Robert De Niro character Casino.
Yeah.
So, we've got our massive grand opening at Mercedes-Benz Queensway tonight.
Nice.
And it's going to be like one of those where some of the best cars in the world are going to show up. So I told you the other day they flew in this one car. I'm not even sure I should say this, but they flew in this one car from Germany.
Yeah.
And I told you it was worth about $90 million, and I was wrong. It was I don't know how they pronounce it. Jugendhorst Coupe, 1955 original, that sold, I think, a year ago to a private collector for $144 million.
Like, what does that even mean? Like, when you said that yesterday, honest to God, I thought you made a mistake and it wasn't worth correcting
him.
I was like, okay, wait, cars aren't worth $90 million. So I just kind of...
It's the most expensive car in the world. And
you get to drive
I also know that you're in the market for a car.
Yes, I am.
And I'm just telling you right now, I know people over there. I could put a good word in
for
you.
What do you think Elise would be on then, on the $144 million Mercedes?
I don't know.
Think I can afford it?
Interest rates are, we're interest rates right now.
Yeah, not great.
Can you imagine the monthly payment on that?
That would be tough. But yes, I am. That sounds awesome. I hope you have a great time.
All right, and listen, if you're up to it, drop by.
All right, I've heard it's going to be a good time.
All right.
Live music.
So, jam-packed. Steve Alliquette's going to join us in a few minutes. Former NHL goalie, TV analyst. And look, he's been ready since like 6 o'clock in the morning.
I heard from his last hit on our show, he just waited for the next one. He's just
Valley, are you chomping at the bit? Is that the proper way to say it?
Well, I told Bourne I'm coming on with a Tommy gun today. and by the way, I thought maybe you were going to introduce me as former conference semifinalist four times backup goaltender Steve Alliquette.
But really, it's a big deal to get to a conference final. It really is. It feels big until you get knocked out. Am I right?
Well, you wake up in the morning after you win the second round and there's four teams left. You know the feeling. Like, that's a big deal. Until it ends and everybody forgets.
Yes. Mm. Yes. Well, hopefully that might not be the case the next three games for the New York Rangers, but a little Debbie Downer last night at Madison Square Garden for what was anticipated as the two best teams in the East for you?
I thought Florida played it to perfection. They had the back check so strong that I thought everybody looked like Barkov. Like, they had 18 Barkovs skating around out there on the Russian gas. When I watched the first period again this morning, you know what I realized, guys? Paul Maurice understood what the Rangers are, and they're challenged as a forechecking team. They are. They're just not as big. And if you don't want them to play through the neutral zone and play possession through the neutral zone, back check the living crap out of them. And if they're not willing to dump the puck, then you will own them in the middle ice. And that's exactly what happened. The Rangers had a difficult time that way with the style that they played. It was really difficult for the Rangers because they were unwilling to adjust during the game to get in on the forecheck and play a game that ultimately they were forced into, even though it wasn't the one they wanted to play.
So it was funny. I heard Paul Maurice use the comment that there's such a thing as offensive chemistry, but he believes some of the guys in his team have defensive chemistry. They just kind of work as sort of a unit, and that protects the goaltender. Sergei Bobrovsky's had an interesting tenure in Florida, but the last couple of years, we've been reminded why this guy won Vezinas. What are your thoughts on where he's at right now? 909 with 9 wins and 12 starts.
All right, so in hockey, you'll hear a lot of clean reads for goalies help them be successful. What is a clean read? Do you know what the challenge for me going to the KHL was after being in the NHL? I couldn't read off my teammates. I had no idea where these guys were. I'm looking up ice, and I see what I believe is a teammate tracking back to cut the ice in half so that the puck carrier that was approaching me, I understand. It's almost like me saying this. A lot of goalies will tell you that reading the play is based on my teammates' positioning, not on what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And if I'm reading that my defenseman's going to come back and cut the ice in half for me, that means I can challenge because the puck carrier is a shoot-only option, not a deke, because my guy's coming back. In the KHL, I get scored on one of my first goals where I step out, I'm challenging this breakaway that I believe is a half-ice breakaway. My teammate completely disappears and the forward goes across the ice and scores on me on a deke. I watch the video the next day and I'm like, what happened to that guy? Like, he just stopped skating at the blue line and now I'm forced to try and make up for a save that I can't correct depth-wise because I didn't read it that way off of him. Mm-hmm. Bobrovsky is getting such clean reads off of the Florida players that his depth is completely accurate on every single sequence.
It's cheating, right? It is cheating when you can read that well and then go to the post to post, which we saw a magnificent save to end the second period. But you are almost moving before that puck even comes across, and there's no net.
All right. So, right, Kipper, if I was explaining goaltending to somebody for the first time watching hockey, I'd say, okay, what's the goalie's job? It's to stop the puck. But you need a few elements to be able to do that consistently. You need angle, you need depth, you need squareness, you need mobility, and you need tracking. And if you're missing one or two of those, that's why goals are scored. If you're providing as a team concept those five things to your goaltender, he's going to be successful. That's why goalies like Bobrovsky can go on these heaters when everything structurally around them is so sound. How about how Florida has changed since 2022, guys? They were the number one team off the rush in 2022 when they won the President's Trophy, scoring 20 more goals than the next place team in the NHL. What are they now? Guys, they were 32nd off the rush this year.
What?
They've completely shut down the rush game. They don't play rush.
Wow.
They don't get rush chances. They went from number one to number 32 in 2 years.
That's incredible.
And this is the most incredible thing I've seen. And by the way, do you know what it reminds me of? St. Louis Blues in 2019 when they won. I talked to their coaching staff after the win. They said we'd be on a 3-on-2 in the postseason and just get it deep because we didn't like our efficiency at converting on odd mans and off the rush. And we're really good in OZP. So let's just play against them in their zone. That's what Florida's doing. They're going to play against the Rangers. They've got the best OZP in the league. They are Carolina Hurricanes, except 10 times tougher. That's what they are.
Yeah.
And analytics are better, guys. Like, legit, they're better. And we always talk about Carolina as being an analytics darling.
No, you're right. Florida, I think, expected goals for and against. They're one of the top teams. And even just basic goals, they gave up the fewest all season. So they're the best defensive team in the NHL. The other three teams that are left are better offensively than defensively. Do you still believe in the age-old adage that defense wins championships?
Do you guys remember when I came on the show and I said the last five Stanley Cup winners were the five best at minimizing high danger chances off the rush over the last 5 years, per 60, all of the math and all that jazz. Now, there are two teams in the final four that are in the top five, and that is Edmonton. That's Edmonton, and it is the Florida Panthers. So, and I would want one of those two teams to win so I could be right again. So my rooting interest sometimes goes there, but in the case, and wild, also wild, Carolina They were 31st in breakaways against during the regular season. And Florida, 32nd. They give up a lot of breakaways. We've talked about this with the Leafs, too. 123 breakaways is what Florida gave up in the regular season. That's 32nd in the league. Last night, the Rangers have two breakaways. Schneider smokes the post. Cooley, he just sort of dumps it into Bobrovsky. So I'm talking to Razor Andrew Raycroft before the round. And we're old teammates in Sudbury. And I go, Razor, what'd you see? And he goes, man, you're going to get breakaways. You're going to get breakaways, but you got to stretch them out. So I went back and watched, and he said 10 breakaways, and this was just what he had thought. Right away, I texted him. Yep, you're right. There was 10. There was 10 breakaways in the Boston-Florida series for three goals, seven saves for Bobrovsky, where they just came in and shot and, like, dumped it on him. They tried to open him up. He never moved. And then essentially it becomes a shot rather than a real deke. The three goals they did score were stretching dekes where they really dragged Bob out. And Bob's really wide on the breakaway stance. He comes out and challenges the shot and takes it away. And ultimately, what we want to accomplish as goalies is make it a one option, take away the shot and force you to deke. And that's what he does. But because he's so wide, he really extends and lays out so you can stretch him out if you go beyond his post.
We're talking to Steve Valiquette, former NHL goaltender, now doing a great job on MSG, covering the New York Rangers, also CEO of Clear Sight Analytics. So, Valley, if we know Bobrovsky did a great job of your checklist, including tracking, where was Shesterkin last night on that first goal against Tkachuk, or even the clincher where he tried to, I think, bank it off the wall, maybe the worst pool shot I ever saw in my life that solidified the win for Carter Versteeg?
Yeah, okay, so the first one, the shot. As we've talked about, boys, you give up a low-danger goal, you lose, right? And in the postseason right now, it's 79% of the time. That was a low-danger we looked at this. It was really distracting, actually, because I'm covering the game, but I'm working with the guys on, did it hit Fox's stick? Was he screened? And essentially, it goes through the triangle between Fox's leg and his stick. No screen. And where's my numbers on that? You guys can imagine what my desk looks like right now. It was a lot of shots this regular season. I think in the postseason, it was 110 clear-sighted shots faced. He had not been beaten a single goal. And then it was, here we go. It was during the regular season, Shesterkin had 39 shots from that exact location, no goal. So I wasn't surprised to see that he had not been beaten there. He had been beaten there twice during the regular season on layered screens. At that distance, it was top of the circle. You guys saw where it came off the release. But back to my earlier point on the five elements to needing a save, he was off on his angle, guys. If you watch from the goalie's perspective, the Fletch cam from behind, you'll see that he was off a foot. And Tkachuk, give him credit. He did bring the release into his body the way Matthews does, and he was able to disguise it a little bit, but it was low danger all the way. Henrik and I were talking about it on the post game. Fans were chirping me, saying that I'm putting Shesterkin under the bus. I'm not. It's just the way it is, guys. Bad goal nowadays in the NHL.
Valley, is that a good sign for the Rangers that, you know, we're going to get a better Shesterkin? And, like, I'm not pinning the loss on him because we did we're not pinning the loss on him, but he doesn't give that goal up, then there's a chance that we can get a bounce and find a way to win a game like that despite being outplayed.
Look, it wasn't that bad of an outcome for the Rangers. They had three high-danger chances in the third period to push. Overall, my secret sauce, guys, for if I was running a team that I would want is seven or more high dangers in a game at the same time while taking 12 or fewer low danger, and that's exactly what the Rangers had. This was a strong game. This was not a bad game for them. However, at points, it was really quiet. In the second period, they came out, and I had said that it was, Schneider's breakaway. Vincent Trocheck had a two-on-one, and then they didn't get a shot for 16 minutes. So it was one of those where it came a little bit in clusters. So that's why it looked certain way.
You can't miss those opportunities when they do come. It'll take you to the other series tonight that gets underway at 8:30 p.m. Edmonton starts off in Dallas. Jake Oettinger is a guy who I think a lot of us thought is going to be one of the better goalies in the NHL for a while. Been a little bit hit and miss, hot and cold this season. You know, what do you think of the goalie matchup in that series? I'm sure you're going to tell us that Dallas has the edge, but Oettinger, yeah, he can't have streaks of cold play.
Yeah, there's sometimes during a season where, you know, you lose your alignment, and that could be, it could be the way that you're standing in the net. Like I said, Shesterkin was off by a foot almost on that goal last night. And right now, when I look at the alignment, meaning squareness, guys, is toe caps, knees, hips, shoulders, hands, almost like you're hugging the puck. That's what squareness really is. And his squareness looks off for me. And it turns his knees. Now, if we're explaining hockey to a youngster that wants to really learn how to read off the goalie, you have to look at the goalie's knees, right? Because we know that the goalie at some point during the shot is going to make it to the ice. But if you can make his knees collapse for a split second, that's when you know you have them. And what I see with him is that he's collapsing his right side early, and it's showing his next position to the shooter. And now he's only allowed two low danger goals in the postseason, and both have been on post play, Kipper's favorite reverse VH. And those are the only two areas that he's really looked suspect to me, is on post play and just staring him down one-on-one. And that's how you have to read off a goalie on breakaways too. Anything one-on-one, a partial breakaway, a half ice breakaway, an open look, he can really give away his positioning early. That's the one place I think I see him foggy. I think that if the Rangers can miraculously beat Florida, because Florida's the favorite for me, they could win a Stanley Cup. I think the cup this year comes out of the East.
So as far as the Edmonton Oilers is concerned, a lot was made out of Knobloch changing goaltenders later on in the series against Vancouver. And yet there isn't the presence of a top goalie still in Edmonton. To your point earlier, in terms of, you know, what's in front of a goaltender to track, is it less important about if it's Skinner or Pickard, and more about how the Oilers play in front of them that will matter?
Kipper, you know what? That's the hard part, because this starts at the beginning of the season. We build trust over the season. And to give you a good example that I remember from my first year goalie coaching after retiring and really focusing on this stuff, Buffalo's playing against Boston. Boston has a 2-on-1, Ryan Miller's in net. Ryan Miller comes out to challenge on the 2-on-1. It's an easy tap in backdoor. He doesn't feel safe on the pass. 16 seconds later, another 2-on-1. This time, Miller adjusts back 4 feet. He's in his blue paint deep. They shoot over his shoulder and it goes in. Do you see how it influences the way the goalie approaches the next sequence?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We want to make saves. We want to be responsible. But we have to read off of what the intentions are of our group. And if it changes all the time, there's no way you're ever going to find a straight line focused sense of structure or statistics that would represent a goalie's playing consistently well. That's the hard part about playing for Edmonton. And to be fair, that's the hard part about the Edmonton team with their goalie, that oftentimes they don't trust on the open shot. So they try and challenge that, and then they give up the bigger pass across. That's the conundrum of a hockey season, and that starts in the first 2 weeks, and we know what their first month and a half looked like. They get it back on the rails, but it's still there. It's still there, and I wonder if you can have that and still win a Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm. Valley, you know, here in Toronto, we followed the firing of Sheldon Keefe closely. He's just been rehired by the New Jersey Devils. I don't remember exactly. I think the Devils had like 81 points this past season, but a lot of that was due to goaltending. They were 30th in save percentage, all strengths, two teams in the league worse than them. Do you see the potential for a rebound? Could the coach help whatever goaltenders are there? Or do they have to go out and get someone like Markstrom or something to help them out?
You know what, Borny, on the big scope of the goalie conversation in the NHL, you know where I'm at right now in 2024? Nobody should ever get goalied.
Yeah.
It's organizational malpractice if you don't understand what your own guy is weak at so you can protect him. So you need to see what everybody else knows about him if you're not really into this information. On top of that, you need to have the guy in your net that we've talked about in the past that can help you against your own weaknesses within your team. I just told you guys that Florida struggles at giving up breakaways because everybody leans in and they just attack. And they do, you can get behind them. Well, if you're going to be 32nd in the league in breakaways, you better have a good breakaway stopping goalie, right. which they do. He's a good breakaway stopping goalie, but there is also a way to score on him. That doesn't mean that he stops everything. Why, when I watch the video, and again, like, you guys understand me now at this point, if I'm watching video, it's because it led me there with the numbers, not the other way around. Mm-hmm. And that's when I find out certain things. But come on, there's no way that the New Jersey Devils that I saw last year in the first round should ever miss the playoffs this season. That was organizational malpractice for them not to get that right this year. That, and you know what's crazy to me, boys, because we talk money too on the show, right? Why not? It's $100,000. It's $100,000 to get the right information. Would you rather have that and miss all those playoff gates? I don't know. To me,
not good business, Valley.
You know?
So, Valley, did Tom Dundon, the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes, and his staff learn a valuable lesson about being goalied?
Listen, man. Yes. Did you see Rod after the postseason presser?
Yes.
I mean, the guy didn't want to throw Frederik Andersen on the bus, but yeah. Kreider's first goal of his three to get them back in it. Hey, listen, to be fair, they outplayed the Rangers in 5 of 6 games, you know, and he has a weakness of getting his left skate back to the post. Lafreniere scored the same way in game 4. Kreider scores the same way in game 6, and it sends up what was one of the most miraculous, most improbable wins I've ever covered in the NHL.
So, Valley, what does summer hold for Clearsight Analytics? What are you working on this summer?
Well, I'm going to be calling Craig Berube after I get off this call.
Yeah.
And no, all jokes aside, I do want to make comment to something you said earlier. Guess what? Mm. Berube's not a bin guy, Borny. He's not
a bin guy.
Not a bin guy.
Likes the numbers.
In fact, he is an over-the-shoulders guy, asking a million questions. Not a bin guy. Maybe a bin guy if it belongs in the bin, okay. But not a bin guy.
That's encouraging.
I'm telling you, it's hard because, as you guys know, we're not in the room, but I know I've got insight into that.
So okay. Just to follow Great. That up, you know, I we've covered Sheldon Keefe over the years here in Toronto, never really struck us as a huge analytic guy, yet it was very clear in the press conference that he's going to work well in departments, I think. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, you know, that's the Devils, right? They're led by that sort of stuff. So, I mean, is he going to have to embrace that more?
Well, look, I think the biggest challenge that analytics has is finding its way on the ice. The biggest hurdle it has is it's got many different departments to go through. You've got to get the general manager to sign off on it. You've got to get the analytics guys to be hockey IQ enough to be able to take the right stuff to the coach. Okay. Because you're going to, and by the way, boys, everybody's doing audits on their stuff now. Mm-hmm. There are 3 or 4 companies out there, including mine, and there are audits being done. And when that audit gets done, the coaches understand that this is stuff we cannot use any longer. So just get it out of my face and you're wasting my time, because what it does oftentimes is put their back up, and now they've got to prove that what you're saying isn't actually happening. And I'll show you the video. Spoke to one analyst on another NHL team recently, and he said, look, you got to understand, I speak in numbers. That's how I speak. Our GM speaks in video, and then the rest of our staff speaks English, and they're trying to communicate hockey their way. We're all trying to get on the same page.
Yeah.
The only way stuff ever works is if it finds a way on the ice. And I'm telling you, I've been at this 10 years, and it has the same challenges now as it did 10 years ago.
Valley, I talked with one NHL team once upon a time. I was working on a job that the job was going to be a go-between, a liaison between the analytics and the coaching staff, so you could actually take the stuff from that department and speak hockey about it and tell them what's useful in this mess. Because it's really the coach is saying, what can I do with this? It's too much. What do I need to know? What is useful here?
Hey, Borny, was that the one that you mentioned was a non-paid position?
It may have been the same organization.
Yeah, right. Hey, but you know what, Borny? This is really good. If you haven't read the book, MVP Machine, mm-hmm. I read it 3 years ago. My son is a pitcher. Okay, he's not a hockey player. He's a pitcher. His coach had a minor league career and a pro career much like mine. Got into this stuff as a baseball guy. Played for the LA Dodgers. Okay. He said, in the LA Dodgers system, we called them conduits, and it was the guy that went with something like this, right? He went up to manager and said, hey, this is this, coach, player, this is why we want to keep you in the lineup a little bit longer. You got to be good at this. Like, for instance, here's a good one. This is one that I would help the Rangers with. How does Artemi Panarin go 0-13 on breakaways this year? Guys, 0-13, okay?
That's wild.
He's a 60% shooter in shootouts. Lifetime. I can explain it to you.
Okay.
In a shootout, you've got a lot of time. He crosses that Royal Road twice. Mm-hmm. In the shootout, he crosses it twice. And if he doesn't cross it twice, he'll quickly cross it and shoot low. But he's a 60% success shooter with no back pressure. But in a game, he gets in tight, too tight to the goalie and tries a deke. There are three ways to score on a goalie. If you're going to shoot before the hash marks, you can shoot high, but don't shoot low. You have still room to climb and surprise with vertical angle. If you get after the bottom hash mark and you want to shoot on the goaltender still, it's probably because you see him holding his gloves high and you can go under the hands there, blocker or glove. But if they're out challenging and you can read off their knees, most goalies have one knee that will collapse early. You have to attack the one that is still up because that does not have an edge if you go round. Mm-hmm. So you can look off the knees and that's how you deke, but you must cross the middle of the ice. And if you carry the puck on a deke, as if it was in line with the post, then you can have the goalie in a position where he doesn't know if you're going to shoot or deke because you're carrying it in a shot position, which would still represent both options. You can work with somebody and help them score is my point on breakaways. Yeah. If you have the information that says you don't do it in the regular season, but you do it in shootouts, you're a capable scorer. We know that you had 49 this year, but I'm telling you, there's a way to be a conduit with this information for every single chance type. Look at Chris Kreider and his growth around his net game. You know, he was in front of the net this year, guys, 17 times when his teammates scored, most in the NHL. Right. And, he's amazing at being able to understand when he's really too tight and the goalie's square on him that he can bump the puck off the pad and then take them to task on the second one. But there are many ways that you can use this information if you have the right conduit to be able to go from info to player. And it's received well from player to player.
Right.
If Borny or Kipper is bringing me something, you know, I'm listening because you guys played.
Bally, we're listening to you, my friend. Bring it on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. This is fabulous stuff, and we're going to pass around a hat here, see if we can get you the 100 grand, because it's worth it. But it's worth it for us on this show. It's worth it. Fabulous stuff. I don't know if you can see on your monitor like we did, but every once in a while there was a bubble of a thumbs up coming up by you.
I don't know where it's coming from, but I love it.
And, I did see that, actually. Yeah. I wasn't sure if that was Sam McKee from the golf course.
We're getting approval from someone.
Double thumbs up here for the Valley here. Hey, always a pleasure having you on our show, man. We so appreciate it.
I love watching you guys when I'm on.
Thanks, buddy. All right.
When do I get to have the button for the drops?
Yeah, you need some drops. I don't know how that works
soon
either.
Enough, my friend. Thanks for doing this.
Anytime, fellas. Have
Steve Valakat.
Thanks, Valley.
MSG. Oh, my God. He's so good.
He is. He and his son's a pitcher. These guys like to do the hardest job on the surface, huh? Good for them. That's awesome.
All right, a little game time?
Let's do it. It's game time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app with the latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19-plus Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Tonight, the Oilers are in Dallas. They are underdogs. Plus 110 on the money line, minus 130 for Dallas. Kipper, any value? Would you bet Edmonton? Get $1.10 for your dollar bet?
Can they steal the first one? Can they go in there and have the feel that, okay, we're the underdogs, we've traveled, and we're dealing with a few different things. Time zone, I don't know. But there's just a feel like, can you go in there and surprise them with a a win.
The one thing that's encouraging for them, I think, is how Vancouver just couldn't generate in the same way. Like, they played really good team defense. That's, you know, for me, I'm not entirely sure. I think I'm leaning Dallas, but the one thing I am leaning, the over-under is set at 6 goals. I'm leaning under.
Yeah.
Just this playoffs, it feels like teams are better coached than ever. No one can score. You watched that game last night. There's no room for anyone.
So layered.
Yeah. Vancouver had no room. We saw the Leafs in their series. No room.
It's got to go by, like, 8 legs before it gets to a goalie.
Well, he's talking about Chris Kreider is the guy who's in front of the net more than anyone else when they score. Well, he gets a hat trick last series because he's there.
So, what has Connor got to produce to get them past Dallas that he didn't have to against Vancouver?
I guess more. I guess more because it's going to be hard to crack that Dallas team. So I am leaning more, more low goal totals and Dallas tonight. So that is Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for the latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Play responsibly.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to track down Dwayne Rolison.
He played for both teams?
Oh, he had a very good run in 2006.
Yes.
We'll talk about that and more, including some sound out of Vancouver as they wrap up with the media today. So plenty more on Real Kipper and Bourne. Don't go away.
Breaking down the top stories in hockey and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back with the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Disco Dan, Jake the Snake, and Dwayne Rolison.
Yeah.
Is he in the house? All right. Let's welcome him in. Dwayne, how are you, pal?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, we're good. Thanks for joining us. Man, time just absolutely flies. The good news is, you know, I can see on your Zoom, and you still look like you can play, and I look like I could carry maybe pucks to the bench. Maybe to the extent of it, but just talk to us a little bit about what you see out of the Oilers today, and if there's any comparisons at all to the run that you had in 2006. I know there wasn't the flash of a Connor McDavid, and to a lesser extent, maybe Leon Draisaitl, but what do you see?
Yeah, we didn't have, I don't want to say it because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings that I played with, but we didn't have those superstars. We didn't have Draisaitl. We didn't have McDavid. But we had four lines of remarkable players. Didn't matter who was getting tipped by MacT to jump over the boards. All five guys were ready to go and could be a game breaker, where, you know, the Oilers now, I'm not saying taking anything away from the current team, but, you know, they rely a lot on Draisaitl and McDavid to do a lot. And obviously Bouchard now, he's carrying a lot of load on the back end. So, you know, we had prongs to do that, but I think up front we were deeper overall than what the current Oilers are.
We just had Steve Valiquette on. He talked a little bit about how for goaltenders, reading off your D and knowing what your team is doing makes the play so much easier. That postseason, I think you had a .927 save percentage. Is it just get to a level where you're in a zone where you just really come to trust and know what the guys around you are going to do?
Yeah, it is. It takes a little bit of work to get it all figured out, especially when I got traded there. You know, MacT is a big believer in blocking shots. And the first few games, I was getting screened by Jason Smith and Pronger, Steve Staios, Matt Greens of the world. And finally, we had to come up with a rule. Like, I came to the guys, I'm like, okay, here's what we're going to do. If anything goes under you, it's in the net, it's on you. I'm not dropping if you're going down. If the puck goes east-west, you guys are going to take the short side away. I got the far side. You know, if it's strong side, you can take the far side. You know, so they're always in the middle. The defense are always in the middle to be able to defect, deflect passes, but also give me an opportunity to read what the options are for the shooter. If they're taking on a rush, if they're taking the far side of the net away, which is taking the passing lane away, you know, I got all short side, and that's easy for me to handle.
We're talking to Dwayne Roloson, member of the Oilers' 2006 Stanley Cup final run. Dwayne, when you talk about, again, what you experienced that year in terms of managing your emotions and gaining confidence as you got to a Stanley Cup final, how would that relate to what Skinner is going through for the Edmonton Oilers? And I know he's a lot younger, less experienced than where you were at that point, but, you know, what could he be experiencing now, knowing that he is the number one goalie based on the 59-60 games that he played this year, but knowing that he's one start away from missing his next one?
Yeah, you know, it's a tough situation. And, you know, Stuart, I know fairly well, and I reached out to him and gave him a nice little congratulations. And, you know, for him, what he's feeling obviously is a lot of pressure, and playing in Edmonton, it's a lot of pressure. And it's not Toronto, mind you, but there's still a lot of pressure, and being the only Canadian team in, there's going to be a lot more pressure. I have friends here that are already asking for tickets. How do I get tickets? How can I fly out to Edmonton to watch games? You know, so it's, you know, there is going to be a lot of pressure on them, but, you know, realistically, like I told him before the coaching change and after the coaching change, you have one job to do, and that's give them a chance to win day in and day out. Focus on those things and forget about anything else. You know, once you leave the rink, get home, deal with family, have fun with your family, and leave hockey behind. And he's done a great job with it. You know, he's reached out a couple times throughout the year, and, you know, so he's in a good spot. Mentally, physically, he's in a good spot to advance and take this team forward. And, you know, he's obviously young, but at the same time, he's got people to lean on, you know, with myself, Grant Fuhr, the people at Billy Ranford, all the guys that played there before. It's a pretty tight-knit alumni association. So current players can reach out to older players and ask questions. And, you know, so, you know, give him credit. He did reach out a couple times this year, and, you know, and I've reached out just to, you know, wish him luck and let him keep going, you know.
That's really cool. That's great that you do that, and that he would be willing, you know, to hear, get some opinion from some outside places. Wanted to get your thoughts on Calvin Pickard. You know, I think he showed that if they do need to go away from Skinner, that the Oilers aren't necessarily done. What did you make of his performance in the playoffs so far?
I thought he was great. I thought he handled the situation extremely well, and, you know, he come in and gave his guys a chance to win. And, you know, for not playing, he didn't look too rusty. And, you know, he's a veteran guy. He's been around a little bit, and it was great to see him have belief in his own game to come in and play as well as he did. And especially in the pressure situation that he was in, like, you know, it was a do or die win for him actually. And, you know, he went on and just played calm and efficient and let pucks come to him. He didn't chase the game at all. And I was excited for him, and I was happy for him and also for the organization.
Dwayne, outside of the Edmonton Oilers goaltending situation, if you were to take a look at goaltending in general from a 60,000 foot view here, the development that reverse HRV.
Reverse VH?
VH. Like, where is it going here for you in terms of how we're producing goaltenders these days?
Well, I still teach, and I teach a lot of young kids, and that's one thing I will not teach. Wow. I do not teach it. I teach people how to get out of it. You know, realistically, the RVH or RHV or whatever you want to call it, I just call it the reverse. It's designed for one play and one play specifically, and that's below the goal line, pass out to the strong side, like a guy that's below the circle on the strong side. So literally you just come off the post in your square dome. We got guys using it when the guys are in a rush at the top of the circles. It's like, I tell my kids, I'm like, you want to score goals, come down, get to the dot and shoot at the center bar. You're going to score every time. I hate it. And it's funny, the guys that I teach, every once in a while, with Freddy Anderson, who I had in Anaheim, you know, text him. I'm like, nope, there's another bad goal by RBH or RHB, you know what I mean? And the kids, they've been so
brainwashed.
Brainwashed, and it's robotic, and it's crazy. And I hate it. And for what it's designed for, it works perfect. But it realistically, it's 0.25 times a game when it's done properly. That's when how many times it should be used in an average NHL hockey game.
Yeah.
You know, so it's overused, and I hate it.
Validated Kipper in a big way.
Rolly, I love you even more now.
Sorry. I hate to validate Kipper. He's not using right, but this one he is right. So, fair enough. I hate the thing, and it's something that I do not teach.
Well, listen, we really appreciate your time and your insight. Enjoy the conference final here. It'll be a good one way or another. We know that for sure with the players involved, and we'd love to have you on again real soon. Rolly, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. As long as I'm alive, because both my players, my kids, one's a Dallas fan and the other one's an Oilers fan. So
oh, boy.
As long as there's no fights and I don't have to break it up, and I'm okay with from that, I'll be able to come on anytime you guys do.
You bet.
So. Good luck to you. Thanks so much.
That's Dwayne Rolson, NHL veteran.
You know,
very memorable in that 2006 run, and then he got
927.
Hurt.
927, crazy. But yeah, the guys just shoot it off the side of the goalie's head because they're already down now. It's entertaining.
Yeah,
we have a ton of clips.
Yeah, okay, where do you want to go?
Well,
tell me where you want to go first.
I most want to make sure we get the Canucks ones in.
Okay,
because they had their postseason press conferences today, and there was some interesting stuff. We got Pettersson, we got Miller, we got Hughes. I'll let you.
All right, let's go to Petey first.
Okay. Let's have him talk about his on the Canucks staff and break. Nope, sorry, this one's on being ready to get away.
It will be nice to get a break from everything. Obviously, it's been a very noisy season in terms of contracts and how I've been the last 3 months, you guys said. So it'll be nice to just get a break from that, but I'm just excited to get a little break here and then get back on the horse again, train hard, and come in best shape possible for next season.
All right, when I hear that, you know, and I've said this a lot about, you know, Mitch Marner as well. Anytime you go into the media or even the part where he says he wants a break.
Yeah.
Man, this is Canada.
Yeah.
Like, if you wanted a break,
don't say
go
that.
Play in Columbus or
go play with Goodrow.
Carolina.
Yeah,
but not here.
You know what that reminded me of?
Not in Vancouver, not in Toronto, not in Montreal, not in Edmonton, not in Winnipeg, not in Ottawa.
That reminded me of Patrick Laine and the way that Laine will just like abuse himself and then goes into these like funks where he's just despondent on the ice, like. Good, he does need to get away, but you're right. It's not doing him any favors.
And listen, he's young. It's the whole experience of this was just not getting out of the second round. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be, as you get older and more expectations and the contract obviously kicking in, like, what you're feeling ain't going away.
It also, when you say you guys have said I've been, you know, crap for the last 3 months, it also implies that you haven't been. It implies that they're making it up, that they're saying it when you have been. So
it's
nice
like to
that.
Just get a break from that.
But go have a break. That's great. JT Miller, you talked a little bit about not loving one of his blowups. Apparently some Canucks fans didn't like that.
Yeah, this was over Saturday night when Dakota Joshua didn't get a puck in deep, and he's an emotional guy. And listen, I've said this like on record for the whole year. I've really loved him in so many different ways, and a lot has to do with Rick Tocchet and
team,
all of
Miller.
That. But I think he kind of sums up his situation best with this clip. Let's have a listen.
Yeah, I really do believe it's a fine line. Like, you know, when you're winning, my emotion's accepted, and when you're losing, it is certainly not. So I just think that's why I downplay it is, you know, I am who I am, and I just think that what comes to mind is the staff here has helped me embrace who I am instead of run from it. You know, it was good that I'm kind of wearing my heart on my sleeve and a little louder, but it helped me, you know, channel it. And it's not like, hey, don't be like this guy. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't look into it that much. I'm just trying to do my job. And if I do my job, it gives our team a better chance of winning. And if everybody does that to a man, I just think it makes everybody look better.
And for the record, he did his job the majority of the time.
Yeah.
But I'm still not a fan of even that clip. And I'm guilty of it when I go home, trust me, with my wife. I am who I am, right? Yeah. But as she reminds me,
yeah,
there's no growth in that.
I love that that is verbatim. Like, I'm know evolving. She has said those exact
yes,
words. Yeah,
100%.
Yes.
There's just, like, no, it that's means great. That you're not moving, that you're not...
It's good to not, be pushed to be a better version of yourself sometimes.
And that's where sometimes, you know, I think he can still find a way to, I don't know, sometimes you got to bite your lip, or sometimes your instincts say, okay, I want to blow up, or I want to give you a piece of my mind. And yeah. It's like, will this really help? And there's a reason why... It doesn't look good when you lose, mm-hmm. is because there's a thought process that it's not good in general.
Right.
Like, maybe they're linked together.
Yeah.
Like, it's great when you win,
yeah.
but you're not acting the same way when you win as when you lose.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, so we'll, Miller's Miller. We also have a good clip from Zadorov. Another one, Daniele
contract.
On his contract. So let's get to the Zadorov clip.
Nikita, I think your stock rose significantly in the playoffs. You did everything for this team, which maybe prices you out of being re-signed here. You talked about how much you loved it. How badly would you like to come back to Vancouver?
Why do you think I priced myself out of here?
Is that his agent asking
maybe
the question?
Your contract may have gone
how
up
how much
a
you
bit.
Think I should be making? Yeah, like, you guys... I don't know where you get those numbers from, the trees. Yeah, I don't know. It's you got to stop listening to Edmonton reporters who's reporting the contract negotiating. It's only between my agent and Patrick. And obviously, I love here. Hopefully, we can work something out.
I love him.
I know.
I love him. How much do you think I'm worth?
That is a very funny lead for a reporter to ask there, you know?
Got a
If you're LV,
he's got
you're
a
like,
great disposition,
up.
I think, that's yeah. just kind of can certainly balance a room.
But you know what, Kip? When the team is losing, and this is related to the Miller one, I think it comes off wrong. Because I think he can seem aloof or above it. Like in Calgary, I don't think they love it.
You know what? You're right. You're yes, 100% for sure. And
he is who he is.
The general feeling is that Vancouver, they were winners this year.
Yeah.
And they achieved more than we ever thought. And yet he gets to look really good right now in a comfortable position, which he earned.
Yeah.
But you're right. There were times in Calgary they thought it was him worrying about his contract in those earlier spots. Remember, he came to Toronto and started kind of pushing his brand?
It's not out of the question that he comes to Toronto again and, you know, pushes his brand, because I think they could use a guy like him. Not saying, just saying.
What do you think he's worth?
Six?
Five and a quarter?
Five and a quarter? Yeah. Probably closer to five than six.
It's but a lot of money.
He's big. He's young-ish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shoots it in the net.
Yeah.
Mean.
Legitimate top four guy now.
I would say
in Calgary,
so.
He found himself on the third pair a lot of times.
Yep. All right, Kip, enjoy the Mercedes thing tonight.
Yeah, great. Great job today. No Sammy McKee. We believe we'll get Sammy back tomorrow. And we'll hunt Doug McLean for off the rails.
Perfect.
What do you got tonight?
I think Dallas wins game one.
You do, eh?
I do. Low scoring affair, 3-2.
Oh, yeah. Another tough one to gather points. Okay, our thanks to Dwayne Rollison, terrific guest, and of course, Steve Aliquette. crunching the numbers. Useful or useless?
Very useful.
We're back tomorrow. Have a great night, everybody.